I really wish I had given you permission to just be really sad about this hard thing that was happening in our lives, instead of trying to talk you out of sadness. By the way, which didn't work.
No, but in fairness, because I don't want you to always take the blame, I wish I had given you permission to be excited. A lot.
Today is 100 episodes. That is so many episodes.
That's about, I think, 91 more than we thought we'd get to.
Oh my goodness. I love starting things. Finishing things is really hard. So 100, like this is like running a marathon, 26.2. I want to put 100 on my back window now, like a sticker.
You just said finishing though. That makes it sound like you're done.
No, I just don't stick with stuff. So I'm still going. I'm still here, 100 episodes in. This is the greatest milestone for me of you three, of us three. So let's admit that.
Let's celebrate for you.
Congratulations. I want to say congratulations to you guys too, because listen, podcasting is one of those things that people think is easy until they do it.
100%. It's like watching Wimbledon on TV. It's like hitting a tennis ball is not that hard. I could do it.
Yeah.
And starting a podcast, it's easy. You know what? You just fire it up and talk.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah, totally. Quite an accomplishment.
Thank you.
And it's been fun to be with you guys through the whole journey. But I want to tell our audience before we jump into this episode that we have got a brand new feature on the Glasshouse Podcast where you can leave a question for Ben and Lindley and we will take time to answer it on the show.
Angie, so this is like this is a 100th episode gift to me because you know I've been excited about this feature. So I'm really excited because I think when you can hear the voice of the people that are listening, honestly, it's very motivating to us that there's real human beings out there that are listening to this.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so I want to let you guys know we have a question from a listener today, which you guys are just about to answer, which you had not heard, by the way, so this will be fun. And then, but those of you listening, if you would like to leave us a question, you can go to the show notes, and there are several ways that you can do that. But just the easiest way is go to the show notes, click on leave us a question, and it will take you to the spot where you can do that. It's really easy.
Very good.
Yeah. Okay, guys. First question. This question comes from Ray Lloyd at Family Church in Windermere, Florida. Here we go.
So one of the greatest challenges is being able to establish value in your wife's role in ministry as well as your role as a pastor in ministry. How would you guide a couple into establishing value for both people in the service they are doing to their church and for God's kingdom?
I first just want to applaud him for taking good care of his body because he's clearly working out.
I was thinking he was at a worship. service.
He was winded. There was some kind of loud music playing. No, he was between reps.
He was at church.
He was pumping iron. Way to go, Ray. All right, value. This is really in your sweet spot, but I want to hear you first.
I actually thought you were going to applaud him for
seeing
value in the wife, but you went to exercise.
Well, this is something that comes so naturally to me that I want you to go first so I don't steal all the thunder.
Oh, please. Gosh, I don't even know where to say. I feel like I could get off on a really long tangent about this. I think it depends on the church. I think it depends on the situation. I think it depends on the wife, whether that's important to her. And even that, though, makes me sound, I'm nervous about that answer because if I say that's important to her, like to be seen as a value, it sounds almost like she's got an issue, like that she needs to be seen of value where she should just be seen as valuable. I'm thinking on it. I'm not as good on the spot as you.
I'm going to tell you all the things I've done wrong so that they can be spun into positive light.
Great.
Where I've really screwed this up before is I have underestimated the importance of taking a picture. Like, you've had some big moments at church, one of them being like you pulled off a huge kids camp and you really wanted me to just take a picture of you in action or get a picture with you in action. And so we have all these great ministry things you've done, but we have no pictures because you're the only one that takes pictures. So I wish I could have been more intentional to say, hey, get a picture of Lindley and I. This is a big week for her. Second of all, I think just a little bit of praise from the pulpit means a lot. I think there were times I was afraid to mention your name because it sounds like I'm just, you know, nepotism kind of thing. But there were events at the church that would not have happened without Lindley Mandrell. And just taking time to say, I just want to recognize that she's, you know, a volunteer, but Lindley did all this work and she really works hard so that we have beautiful events at our church. And I just want to say how thankful I am for her. We do that for other volunteers. Mm-hmm. But it's like weird for a pastor to say that about his wife. Third thing I would say is I wish I had been more supportive on weeks when you had significant ministry things that I wish I would have had my sermon prepared in advance so I could have just hung out with you. Like when we did the father-daughter banquet, like it was such a big deal for you and such an important event. If I had been a good husband, I would have had my sermon done so I could just like run and get flowers or run and get this or just be there and be silly and make it fun instead of you got your thing going, I got mine. Mm-hmm. And I think I missed out on some opportunities there.
Appreciate this.
Yeah.
I think, Angie, I misunderstood the question a little bit because Ben took it like value. I don't know. What was your take on
how can I establish value or help her feel valued?
Yeah, I was thinking.
Yeah, no.
I was thinking more like from the church's perspective, but maybe that's what you're saying. Like if you had said those things in front of the church.
But therein lies the problem. You can't make people value your wife.
Yeah.
You can't. All you can do is value her and hope that that sets an example. In fact, the times where I've tried to get people to value you is backfired on me. Hey, when you get a chance, thank my wife for that. You know, it never works. Or when they do, they're like, you know, I mentioned this to your husband. He said I should tell you. Then, well, that just discounts everything.
I don't want to be like a token compliment.
So I think it's about personal example.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always go to like Dr. Dilbeck talked about on our show. When you say the word value, I think of monetary, like let's pay her. And how do you, as the pastor, how do you get your wife compensated for all the work she does? I mean, that's really hard. It's very tricky. And something we talked about on the show multiple times.
I have strong opinions about this. You don't have to agree with me. You can disagree with me and still be my friend. I feel like there should be other people in leadership that are part of this accountability process that when this becomes far more than a volunteer role. Okay, she's not putting in 30 or 40 hours a week on this.
Yeah.
It's a job. And there should be a safe place to say, I think Lindley's gifted in this way. I think she's bringing a lot of value. I think it would be wrong to continue to ask her to do it for free. I wish I had been a stronger advocate for you in that. Now, eventually the elders at Storyline did step forward and do that for you, but I wish it had been at my request.
Yeah. That's more the angle I was thinking, Angie, when you're talking about that. I couldn't decide if he was not saying, you know, my wife is basically working full time as a volunteer at church, and how do we value her and monetize that? But I may have misunderstood that. I liked your other ones too. I appreciate all those sweet things you said.
Sweet. Score some points.
Okay. Before we jump into the episode, one other thing we need to make sure we let our listeners know about is that we are now full video on YouTube. So if you've been listening for these 100 episodes and you have no idea what Ben and Lindley Mandrell look like,
you can watch us on for 40 minutes.
And you can watch.
Absolutely.
How exciting.
I know. So, so exciting. Okay, guys. That is kind of the update for the 100th episode for me. But you guys have a lot of things you want to reflect on today, so I'm turning it over to you.
All right. Okay. John Eldridge wrote this book, Wild at Heart, and 10 years later, he did a new edition, and he wrote a preface to it. And I remember reading the preface. He said, it's been 10 years since I wrote this. I wanted to go back and read it again to see if I still believe it's true. Because, you know, sometimes you write stuff, and later you're like, I wouldn't have written that again.
Of course.
And I remember he said that it held even more truth 10 years later than when he wrote it. And we recently went back and listened to episode one.
Well, as we were trying to decide what to do for the 100th episode,
yeah.
Like it felt weird to just interview someone else as a normal episode. So we said, what if we went back and listened to the original one? Because that was now aired over 2 years ago.
So we went back and listened to it separately and like took notes. Mm-hmm. And then like, hey, what did you notice? And so we wanted to point out a couple of things from episode one, which was really kind of a crisis moment in our marriage that was a big part of kicking all this off, mm-hmm. is just learning to deal with emotions.
Yeah.
And so we picked a few clips that we wanted to play, and we wanted to play a couple of our clips. Why don't we roll the first clip?
You wanted to be sure and say that so people didn't check out.
Well, I don't want you to think like we're going to play these long clips, but the first one is a little long.
Yes.
But you got to get it all for us to be able to comment on it. So let's roll that.
Yep.
And we'll come back and talk about it.
Great.
And for the first time, I thought, oh my goodness, I am a preacher. And Lindley saw that, celebrated that, and encouraged me to pursue it. And that's when we knew we were likely headed towards some kind of public ministry.
Right.
Embraced ourselves for it.
How do you feel about that, Lindley, when you're like, oh, pastor's wife?
I was completely naive to it. I mean, I didn't know. And so most people in pastoring have a story of they started in a little tiny church.
You kind of grow with the church as you grow older. We were thrown into it.
Yes. So I was 25 and he was 29 when they approached him about doing this. We had two children that were babies, and then we had two children in the next literally 12 months. And so honestly, I was so busy with the kids that I just didn't even have any category for what that meant. And I actually think that probably saved me because I didn't have fear because I didn't know what was going to happen. But honestly, that church was so good to us. I mean, really, really good to us and helped us a ton. Lots of sweet relationships came out of that church. So it was good.
And I was first the Sunday night preacher, which I say was still the best job I've ever had because you could speak boldly without ever having to make a bold decision. Mm-hmm. And so I was just a teacher and I wasn't responsible for anything. The buck didn't stop with me. But then when they asked me to transition into the senior pastor role, that's when we really began to feel the pressure of pastoral ministry, the spotlight, the glass house. And even the senior pastor was there. He sat us down and warned us, hey, this is going to be lonely at times. We did not believe him. I remember us walking out of that session and thinking, well, that's his experience. We'll be different.
Right.
And we weren't different. We were not different is the title of that clip.
Yep. That's what I was about to say. We kind of title all three of these clips, and that's the principle of this one.
So what did you think about that clip? Like, why did you note that one? What was special about it for you?
Well, honestly, I thought about it because I think sometimes the tone of the glass house can be very hard. Like, it's a hard ministry, that kind of stuff.
It can be a little whiny.
Yes. And we recently were asked to do an article, and the thing that kept coming up was how much we love where we are now, but we do miss some things about being in pastoral ministry. And so, I mean, I just look back and I'm so thankful that I really was naive, because if I knew now what I knew then, if you got asked to be a pastor again of a church, it'd be harder for me because I know what to expect. So there was some beauty in that comment for me about I was naive, because I think God was protecting our hearts there and preparing us to be able to just experience it from like babies on.
Absolutely. We're going back to that quote I love by Elton Trueblood. A man has at least a start on the meaning of life when he plants shade trees under which he knows full well he will never sit. Mm-hmm. In a way, though, as a pastor, you do get to sit under the trees. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I just visited a campus in California and for Lifeway, and there was a gal there that was in our church in Denver, and she's a student in college. She's a senior. And I got to sit down and have lunch with her, and I was just so impressed by her. That I had a little part of helping her become like a really incredible person. And when you're in the ministry, you get to literally watch people grow up. And you're never really done growing up. I went back to episode one, and when I listened to it, I was like, I've grown a lot since this episode. Like, I really have. God's really grown me a lot since this episode. Mm-hmm. And when you get to be a pastor, or you get to be a pastor's wife, you get to literally watch God grow people up. It's pretty amazing.
But also, they get to watch you grow up. So recently, totally. We were at a wedding. Ben performed a wedding for a family that's super special to us. And we ended up sitting at the rehearsal dinner with two couples from Inglewood, from our first church in Jackson. And I mean, they remember our kids as babies. I mean, baby babies. And they got to sit there with us. Our youngest was not there, but our other ones that are, almost 17, 18, and 19 were there. And it was so fun because we've mentioned these families to our kids before, but they have no recollection of them. But they are the funniest people, the funniest couples. And our kids were just sitting at the table laughing and cackling and having a good time. And so they got to walk away saying, man, those were great couples from that church. Like, it would be special to be at Inglewood again and get to have a relationship with them.
Well, the clip really, it was about our calling. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know what we were stepping into. We thought we would be immune from all the hard things. Mm-hmm. We thought everything would be hunky-dory. And it wasn't. There were hard things along the ministry. But the thing we want to emphasize in this first clip is there really is no better place for community than the local church. Mm-hmm. The proximity of your lives.
Life on life ministry, that's what we keep saying.
The best. And so many inside jokes get started in local church ministry. Like, we had this big tradition at my first church. It was really funny that all the men wore red sweater vests on our Christmas candlelight dinner. It wasn't anything that was announced. It just became part of like a joke.
Yeah.
And I still run into people from Inglewood. We talk about red sweater vests. But there was one time when our worship pastor, Travis Cottrell, he told me he was not wearing a red sweater vest. And so
I will not wear a red
sweater vest. I actually bought him one. And I got on stage and I was going to announce that he was going to wear this red sweater vest. And then he pulled off his jacket.
No, he pulled off his black sweater vest.
Yeah. And underneath was a red sweater vest. And it was like this incredible moment in the life of the church of just fun and joy and, you know, Christmas happiness.
Yeah.
That happens when you're in proximity. Mm-hmm. And so making your life rooted in the local church is, I mean, God had such a great idea.
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah.
So that was the first clip.
But why weren't we different? That's the topic.
Why weren't we different?
Well, I mean, I think we were just saying, like, we came into it believing that we weren't going to have challenges or anything like that. So the tone we do want to talk about here is how great the church is. But it is challenging. And there are going to be people who don't like you no matter what. And there are going to be problems along the way.
I thought if I was just nice enough and spoke kindly and explained decisions adequately, that people would get on board, all people. And I just was naive to think that there weren't going to be some people that just didn't like me or didn't like the direction that I was taking the church. And that was hard.
It's a good thing that's not a problem anymore.
No. Everyone here at Lifeway Unanimous thinks I'm just, you know, making every right decision. Yeah. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Okay, let's go to the second clip. Here we talk about the precarious position that wives find themselves in as their husbands answer a call to another place. Mm-hmm. You know, we call this clip lose-lose.
It's a lose-lose.
Let's play it.
When we were processing this call to Lifeway, we were on vacation because we were celebrating some good things that had happened at Storyline. And we were processing this, and I instantly felt like I'm kind of in a lose-lose situation because there are very few times when a man like Ben would get this opportunity to come serve in this capacity at Lifeway. And so what an honor. That's a really great thing. So if I say no, every hard thing that happens at Storyline from here on out, he could be resentful to me for that because he had this chance and he, you know, wasn't able to take it because I held him back. But if we left, it meant giving up all that we loved at that time. And so I just had to trust God because I didn't understand it. I mean, you know, it was one of those, I don't understand why you're taking this away. I do now. I mean, I understand more now. But I just, at the time, was really, really in shock and moved here in shock. Like, it took me months and months. But he moved here and jumped full speed ahead, just immediately.
There was excitement, you know, a new assignment, a new team, a new task. And at the same time, like, a deep level of grief about, I still love all these people at Storyline. I'm not ready to leave. But at the same time, feeling like God has called us to a new task. So it's such a, it was a bittersweet thing for me, but
it was, you didn't grieve that until about a year later.
It was more exciting at first for me because I immediately began to feel the pressure of leading Lifeway through what I knew was going to be a very difficult season of transformation. I didn't realize till we listened back to episode one, just how immature I was emotionally. This is one of the areas where I feel like I've grown. When we interviewed Kyle and Christine Hoover, I remember he specifically said that he was emotionally immature. And I've never heard a guy say that. Mm-hmm. But if you look at maturity in scripture, we're always maturing. We're always growing. And when I look back at that episode, when I listened to it, it was like, I really wish I had given you permission to just be really sad about this hard thing that was happening in our lives. Instead of trying to talk you out of sadness, by the way, which didn't work.
No, but in fairness, because I don't want you to always take the blame, I wish I had given you permission to be excited.
Hmm.
So,
you've never said that before. That means a lot to me.
It just hit me.
That means a lot to me.
Thank you.
Because I was excited.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I don't want it to always be that you share this vulnerable feeling and what you messed up and all those. Like, it was exciting for you, and there was a cloud of doom and gloom on the house. And so if I could do it over again, I wouldn't minimize my feelings, diminish them. I probably would have gotten into some sort of transitional counseling a little bit sooner so that I could balance out my hurt, but also your excitement.
That's really good because one of the tensions we had early on was if I had a really good day,
yeah,
I didn't feel like I could tell you I had a really good day because I feel like it would just rub it in your face.
That's because that's exactly what would happen. Because if you came home and said I had a good day, I'd be like, that's great. I had peanut butter and jellies at home by myself because I don't have any friends here because you took them all away from me. I'd go on some rant. So, I do feel like everything, I think one thing that we've learned is that everything has two sides to it. Yeah. So whereas you would do some things differently, I would also.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
I was recently with the elders of Storyline. We went out there for Christmas and I asked them to have breakfast with me, the two original elders. Mm-hmm. When I announced I was leaving, they did not take it well. They were very sad. I remember one service where they were helping the congregation understand what was going on with me and they were just very sad. And I was mad that they were sad. I wanted them to be happy because the church wasn't about Ben Mandrell. And I was so naive to think that what was happening to them and losing the only pastor they've ever had and the fear that comes with that wasn't going to affect them. And I needed to sit down with them and just tell them I was sorry for not being more open with them without giving them more of my heart through the process.
Yeah.
I really don't think I say goodbye well. I think I'm afraid of being sad myself. So I shortcut goodbyes,
yeah,
which causes people to feel like I didn't care. Because it's easier for me to not experience sadness, so I just don't do the goodbye thing. Mm-hmm. But then they didn't get the opportunity to be sad with me.
Debbie Stevens talked about this, the tending to goodbyes.
Yeah.
I think it's just a personality thing. I think that's hard, and different people want to just say, don't cry, I'm coming back, or, quick goodbyes kind of thing.
I wish that I could have gone back and been a little bit more open with people as I was experiencing the call. The shock thing is really hard for people. Mm-hmm. And I was so wanting to keep everything confidential that I wish I would have confided in more people early on so they could know what was going on with me before I made the announcement.
I would say if we were redoing something now, you and I have, as a couple, poorly allowed people to speak in.
Yeah.
I do remember this when you called or when you asked Travis and Angela Cottrell to move to Englewood, they had a significant team of people praying around them.
Yeah.
For a pretty significant point of time. And both times we've moved places, we have privately done this and not allowed people to come in because we don't want to be persuaded by what they say, but really what if they are hearing from God. So if I was a listener here, I would not do what we did.
I agree with that. But I think it's the bow I want to put on this is grace, and that transition is just always hard. Mm-hmm. The reason that God grows us so much through transition is because it's painful. Mm-hmm. And God uses pain to grow us. And the thing I would say to myself at episode one is, hey man, in a couple of years, this is going to feel so much better.
Yeah.
It's going to feel so much better. Just continue down the path of faithfulness and it will heal. It will get better.
Yeah.
And I would say that to anybody in ministry who's going through a really hard season. We tend to think that it's always going to feel like this. These clouds are always going to be over us. There's never going to be blue skies. So I think this segues nicely into this last clip, which is about blue skies. The way this episode ended, episode one, we asked Steve and Curtis Chapman's permission to play the song at the end of the episode. That really had become a theme song for us about waiting for blue skies.
Actually, that had become my theme song.
Yeah, I stole it.
Then when you stole it, I was like, don't steal my ministry and my friends and my song.
And my song. You can't take my song.
That's my song.
Well, I talk a little bit at the end of the episode. You can hear the emotion in my voice. We were still very tender.
Yeah, you were crying.
In episode one. So listen to this.
There's a song that Lindley and I have both gravitated toward over the last 2 years. It's by Stephen Curtis Chapman called Till the Blue. And the lyric goes, till the blue returns to your skies until the laughter returns to your eyes. And it's about walking with someone through sadness and the commitment to be there until the blue returns. And sometimes in life, we just have cloudy skies. And it's such a good and sweet thing when someone's committed to walk with you through all that.
I'm like tearing up.
Yeah. It was a really hard time.
Well, listening back, how sad your voice was.
Yeah. I can hear my depressed self of, I think mostly just a lot of fear. Like, have I totally ruined our marriage? This move was more for me than you. It was exciting for me and challenging for me, but you really sacrificed a lot. And I was living in a lot of shame at that point of shame on me for not seeing this coming and how hard this is going to be on you. And, you know, I think where we are today is one of our favorite quotes is, what joy there is in accepted sorrow. I've accepted that was a really dark season of our life. I've accepted that there were a lot of things we could have done better, that I could have done better. But we've now been able to turn the corner to accept, like, part of life is failure. And learning from mistakes, and that's how we grow. And we're now on the other side of that.
There's a Alan Jackson song called The Older I Get. Pretty much every lyric in it is special, but for the females out there listening, there's one part that talks about how he's not sad about the lines on his face because they're lines from laughter and from crying. And I do think that, like, embracing getting older also means embracing different seasons. Like, there are seasons of joy and there's seasons of really sadness. And so, like, the aging of my face, I mean, honestly, in a way, it kind of helped me embrace the fact that, like, as I've aged, we've weathered seasons and we've come out on the other side.
You know what was the scariest part about this move? Moving to Denver was scary because we gave up everything we knew and we were going to start a church from scratch in a very post-Christian society, but it wasn't scary because you and I were like lockstep. Mm-hmm. Like, we were in it together. What was really hard for this is it was a season where we were going through something really scary and we weren't together.
Yeah.
We were very broken. Our marriage was broken. It was lonely.
If people are watching this on YouTube, which I can't imagine why to watch us here sitting here, but if you are, I was looking up something a second ago, and of course, Ben and I have changed some patterns of our marriage in the last even 6 months. And one thing that we do pretty regularly is pray 13. I forget what it is.
The love passage.
Yes, the one that everybody knows. But the one that sticks out for me a lot is, love is not self-seeking. And I think that we both kind of lost our minds a little bit and were self-seeking. You know, your career advancement, and I was self-seeking, just like, what about me? You know, what about, I add value. I'm a person. I have worth. And minimizing the value in that season of creating stability in the home. And, you know, it had to be some sort of applauded position that, you know, that I needed to find that. And so it's just been special praying that together out loud over each other. And I do think that we've come to the other side of just saying, you know, we're not here anymore to seek our own glory. Like, I want to see you succeed here, you know. And it's sad to me to say that I didn't feel that way when we initially moved here. You took everything, like, air quotes, like, you took everything from me. And so it was hard for me to see you succeed. And now I realize it was part of God's, like, good and perfect plan. And we've seen things come in with our children that have been so good and special. We've had relationships created. Like, we both, it's not just you, love the people of Lifeway now. We've talked about that. Now, here, if we left, it'd be sad. Like, I mean, there's so many sweet relationships.
Oh, man.
So I just think that we were in a season of self-seeking. And if you're listening, and it's the constant conversation is, well, you know, me, 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 I think you maybe need to start praying that love passage.
Well, depression, I think what depression does, and I think you and I are both going through a dark season, is it becomes a self-obsession. Mm-hmm. You know, you're always thinking about yourself, how you're being treated, how you're not being treated. And there was a season there where we just rounded down on each other. We had always in our marriage given each other the benefit of the doubt, it felt like. But we went through a season where we didn't, mm-hmm. where I was suspicious of you.
Which made me so mad because I'm the one who gave up everything. I was like, I have given up everything for you. And why are you rounding down on me?
We just didn't trust each other. Like,
I wouldn't say that.
I didn't think that you had my best interest in mind. And you didn't think I had your best interest in mind. And we were just bitter at each other for a while. But we went through a bunch of counseling and things are better.
Yeah. I mean, even the last 6 months, it's been like so fun again. Our marriage has been fun again.
Yes.
So we did come up with three things, like three practical tips, because you are still a preacher.
Yes. So what would we do different?
Application.
If you go through a major transition, like what would we learn? We've got three things. So why don't you take the first one?
Well, the first one is we would have just gone to a counselor sooner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Debbie Stevens again talked about that, how understanding herself that leaving was hard, saying goodbyes. And I don't care how good you are at it. Like, there are still very, very hard things about transitioning. And so whether you need it personally, whether you need it as a couple, whether you need it as a family, I just would be very humble and say there's no shame in preventative transitional counseling to make sure that everybody is able even to share their feelings. I think that's the hard thing sometimes. I think in the Christian world, we kind of like Jesus juke our kids or our spouse into saying, you know, if something's hard, being like, well, but we know it's the call of God. So, you know, don't feel.
There's great people everywhere.
Yes. Instead of just allowing people to be sad or lonely or hurt or all those things.
There's relationships in Denver and in Jackson, Tennessee that have never been replaced and won't be. Mm-hmm. And I don't get to see those people very much anymore. That's sad. Mm-hmm. God has added new people to my life and I'm grateful for that. But it's okay to just say, like, I really miss those people. I really missed that place. It was hard for me. I needed some help getting there. So going into counseling sooner would have been better. Second thing that we'd say is just check your ego at the door.
We saw that recently.
So I don't know if you guys have seen the Netflix documentary of We Are the World.
Little Lionel Richie and Michael Jackson.
It's such a good one. But it's all about how they brought all these really famous people together to make the song. But somebody posted right above the studio door, check your ego at the door.
Well, because there's like 45 of the biggest stars of that time coming in, and they said, this is going to be hard.
So I don't care who you are, you have an ego. And when you leave a church, it hurts when things change.
Yeah.
And they're going to change because they didn't hire you to follow you. Mm-hmm. and many times they'll hire somebody that's very different than you to accentuate some things you didn't bring to the church.
Right.
And I think we've matured now to understand that that's a natural part of leadership transition. And, you know, it's not personal and things change.
One thing that we say, and this sounds more harsh than what I mean, is that everyone is replaceable. And that doesn't mean they're not special. They're not super talented and super gifted. But even now, sometimes we've now gone through this several times and seen how replaceable we were. And are, and so people will come to you and say, hey, you know, so-and-so is thinking about leaving. And we'll just say, well, they should leave if they feel called to leave. I mean, they're replaceable. No matter how gifted they are,
right,
they'll be replaced and we'll keep going. And it's helped us just keep that mentality of people transition all the time. It just happens, you know, so don't hang on to something or someone if they're feeling a call to go somewhere else.
Yeah. And understand that change is part of the natural rhythm of life. And mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you're there 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years. When you leave, it's going to change. It's going to change a lot. Mm-hmm. But no one can ever take away the contribution that you made to the life of that church. Mm-hmm. To get it from point A to point B or B to C, somebody else is taking it from C to D. Mm-hmm. Tells us, so let it go.
Let it go.
Just let it go. All right, number three.
So we have learned not to take everything so seriously. We are really serious people and intense. And I say a lot of times, Ben will ask me why I'm not doing something. And I'll say, because I don't have the ability to chill. Like, that's just, I wish I did. Like, I would love to just chill out, but I can't. I'm just kind of intense. And, but we are slowly learning to chill out just a little bit and rest in God's sovereignty, have some peace.
Well, and I think this part of ministry is hard is that you take it so personally because it is your whole personal life. But there's a line to be drawn there. The people who are the healthiest in ministry are able to walk away from it and say, you know, I'm not sad that it's over. I'm happy that it happened. Mm-hmm. You know, sadness is a part of it, but there's always going to be the sense of joy that I got to be a part of something special. So keeping things in perspective has been really hard for us. But I think, you know, when and if the Lord transitioned us from Lifeway to something else, I think we'll do it better. Because we've made the mistakes of thinking that, you know, our contribution was so unique and special that no one could ever top that. There's going to be other great leaders that come behind that do things and different things.
I think the older we get as well, we realize what's actually important.
Yeah.
I mean, I think your 20s and 30s are exciting and great. And anyone listening now, like, enjoy them. I think as you get 40s and your children get older and you begin to see people passing away, loved ones, you know, getting sick, you learn to transition into what's actually really important.
Yeah. Okay, so I got a couple of questions that aren't on the script.
Oh, gosh. I didn't know this.
100 episodes, Lindley.
Yes.
What's been the hardest part of doing a podcast for 100 episodes for you?
Keeping you engaged. We've had, I mean, gosh, if Angie was on here right now, we've had a couple of meltdown moments of...
I don't think I can keep doing this.
Well, no, there's one where Ben called and was like, I'm done. I'm done. I can't do
tapped
anymore.
Out.
And I'm like, do I get a say-so in this? I mean, we're 50-50 here. And not to say that it will go on indefinitely. Everything has a time frame.
I think a big piece of that for me is, like, I just don't ever want to assume that we haven't exhausted a subject. Mm-hmm. You know, there's times when you're like, okay, you've said everything there is to say about that. I think the thing that's made it different is, honestly, I've started traveling a lot more as the leader of Lifeway. I've started getting out with the churches more. And almost every church I go to, there's somebody that says, hey, my wife and I listen to your podcast. And that has been probably the most motivational thing to keep going, is that there's real people out there serving in churches that are listening to this and getting some source of inspiration and encouragement.
If I can answer more seriously, I mean, that was serious, but I would say also our knowledge of pastors and pastors' wives out there is small. I mean, we have a lot of acquaintances, but I do think it would be fun if we had listeners who had a pastor with a really cool story or something that maybe we needed to be able to highlight. That would be a great thing for them to share with us.
Here's one of my great insights. There's no way we're here today without Angie Elkins.
It's true.
I mean,
yes.
People don't realize how much work goes into, this is the easy part.
Yeah.
Sit down, record the content, but somebody's got to like go edit it, create a nice, beautiful, I mean, the music that Robert put together, like the whole experience, it's really been Angie's brainchild. And I cannot say enough about the magic of Angie Elkins.
That's right.
So it feels like 100 episodes we need.
I feel like she needs to chime in here.
Yeah, Angie, come on. Come into the show. Where are you? Come on.
I love you guys. Listen, I, even before you said all the wonderfully nice things about me, I was just thinking, there was a moment earlier in the show and I just thought, I love you guys. And like reflecting on the 100 episodes, I think about that very first one and how we barely knew each other.
Yeah.
Literally barely knew each other. And I'm asking you these super intimate questions and how vulnerable you were. And I tear up when I hear Ben's voice in that first episode. Like, just so much has changed. But it has been an absolute joy and adventure to work with you guys over these 100 episodes, for sure. I mean, I can remember being out on a walk and Ben texting, can we keep doing this?
I think that was episode 3.
I said this is about 91 more than I thought. We initially did like 8 or 9. We did 8 because we did 8 emotions in our entry. And I thought, well, this will be it because Ben will be done after these. And we kept it going.
You know,
by the grace of
God, we are what we are. And we made it to 100 episodes. And hey, I can't wait for the 200th episode celebration.
Let's do it.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah. I can't wait to do it.
I had one last question for the two of you.
Okay.
What has been the most inspiring part of working with me on this project?
I'll actually answer this seriously because I know you're being sarcastic, but in an effort to be sweet to each other, I love sitting beside you and hearing the amount of quotes that just fly out of your brain. Like, I think it's really, I mean, the amount of recall you have and the amount of books you've read, I don't have that ability. That's not my gift. I ask the, you know, questions that always get edited out. But I love to sit beside you and hear that. And it makes me really proud because I think you're just very intelligent.
Well, I wasn't fishing for that, but that was a great way to end this podcast. Angie, your turn.
I do have an answer. One of the things I love about both of you is the difference in your personalities. And Ben, especially how you play to Lindley Like, you know when she might be uncomfortable, or you know when she has really reached down deep to say something, and you always acknowledge and compliment that. And I see it, because as I've learned you guys over the years, and I appreciate that. And of course, Lindley, I have to correct you, because when you say it always gets edited out, it never gets edited out. Like, that's my favorite stuff.
But I preface it with, Angie, just feel free to edit it out, because we all know I'm going to say stuff and put my foot in my mouth.
Well, I'm really excited about 101. I think it's a great direction to go with how to have a healthy sex life. It's going to be a really good episode.
Oh, gosh.
If you want to make Lindley really uncomfortable, just ask her to talk about anything around sex publicly.
I would never. Angie's talked about this before. She's like, man, you know, if those kind of episodes get tons of listeners. And I'm like, and my parents may be listening, and I would never have this conversation.
Well, Song of Solomon, that's the next one.
Just come stop on now.
All right. Well, Angie, thanks for helping us pull this off. 100 episodes. There it is.
There it is. We did it.
Hey, I want to say I love you guys too. I love you in two very different ways, obviously, but I love you, and it's been fun to enjoy this together.
You didn't answer about the best part about being doing it with me.
Oh, without a doubt, I love that strong, direct bluntness that you have with you, that people are like, it's kind of like on American Idol when Simon Cowell would speak, and like, finally someone told him the truth. He's really not that good. You know, but people trust someone that's sincere. And I think your sincerity, from the moment I've met you, your sincerity has been the thing that's most refreshing to me. The episode with Landon Dowden, when he said about his wife, Tara, that she absolutely will not let them be anything other than who they are. And I think you're the same way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The Glass House is executive produced by Angie Elkins, edited and engineered by Donnie Gordon with help from Nathan Howard. Show notes and production help from Nikki Ogden. Photography by Emily Bergeron and Bailey Watley. Recorded at the Lifeway Podcast Studio in Brentwood, Tennessee.